This is Counterculture with Marie Buskey, Wednesdays at 10 a.m. on Reality Check Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome along back to Reality Check Radio and your afternoon fix of M&M with Marie and Marty, Media Matters. A lot of M's. How are you, Marty?
Yeah, I'm good. Thanks, Marie. I must say this week I've had a bit of trouble absorbing media. I don't know whether that's a promising start to a show about media.
No, you and me both. We both had to have a crisis phone call yesterday, didn't we? Yeah. Because we were suffering from the same affliction. So on to more important topics. How's Chickenopolis? I think that's a much more favourable topic.
Yeah, I mean, I've got some fish frames that my neighbour gives me, and the chickens love that, and it boosts the omega-3 content of my eggs. So I sort of leave them out, and then I've put about a ton and a half of mulch down in the chicken yard. So it's making soil. It's already about a foot higher than it was when I started, and absorbs the chicken poo, and my fly traps catch the flies, and you don't really have to spread mulch when you've got chickens. They sort of spread it themselves. So they sort of bury these fish heads, and then they grow maggots, and then they dig them up and eat them.
Well, I'm very glad to hear the chickens are doing well, and you are getting lots of productivity off your little block of land, which is always a good thing. And I think it's getting that time to get out and actually having some mindful moments, and I totally appreciate that, because I'm like you, trying to retox into the media this week was really, really difficult when obviously we've been part of it for the last couple of weeks or so. And yes, as you heard, we spoke to Alistair the other day.
And yeah.
Yeah.
It was a good interview. If you haven't caught it, have a listen.
Yeah, it was great. And it was nice for Phil. Like, it was really, he hates public speaking. Phil's not super fond. He had some things that he wanted to say, and he wanted to be able to say them because he hasn't. Like, he's kept silent through this entire process. You know, we've not sort of banged our drum in the media. We've not jumped up and down on social media. I've kept absolutely stum while I've been here. It has certainly been sort of a week. So thank you to everybody who sent in your words of support over the last few days via the inbox or the text machine. I've seen all of those. Phil's seen all of those, and they've been really humbling. So we do actually appreciate that. If things change, I'll let you know here. We're just considering our options at the moment if we go to next steps and appeal. We haven't quite made that decision yet, but I'll let you know if we do. But anyway, you and I decided to make our lives easy this week, that because, you know, there's an election going on. And not here.
Consequential.
Very consequential. I mean, by this time next week, it'll pretty much, well, one would hope it would be all over by the shouting, but you don't necessarily know. My show yesterday, I had a compilation of some of the key people that I've spoken to about the US election this year. It's all over the map with us. It depends on what media outlet you read, how you consume your news, to where things actually are with what's going on with the election. I mean, have you found that? Have you, when you've looked at anything to do with the American election, have you just gone, are we talking about the same event?
Yeah, I mean, everything in the papers is either from the Washington Post or the New York Times, which are two notoriously left-wing biased outlets. And as a result, any criticism of Biden and Harris is framed as either cartoonish or malevolent and motivated by intolerance or any other number of things. And this, yeah, you very rarely see an articulate description of why people would vote for Trump that's perfectly rational and reasonable. And I mean, for me, you know, I mean, sometimes people talk to me about Trump, and because I would prefer him over Harris, they want to talk about the various talking points that are in the media about him. And I mean, that guy's been campaigning for something like 58 days straight without a day off. It takes a certain type of person to do what he's doing. Mm. And that type of person, great men, are really nice to live with. Their children often have a tough time. And I think his children have had less of a tough time than a lot of children of great men. So, you know, I mean, I've got reservations about his choice of staff in the past, the extent to which he is kind of controlled opposition, the extent to which he's vulnerable to flattery by people who've got an agenda. And I think if he gets in, and if the Democrats don't get their judges to refuse to certify the election, and then once supporters kick off, declare martial law, if he actually does get in, it's going to be a very different administration. And for me, it's like watching one of those TV ads, you know, but wait, there's more. You know, like Trump on his own, I'd think, man, yeah, every time over Harris and that agenda. But, you know, once you get a few, but wait, there's more, and, you know, Tulsi Gabbard, man, right, fantastic.
Well, you know, I think she has the potential to be the first. If Harris doesn't get across the line, she's probably most likely going to be the
president. And she should.
President.
You know, could almost start framing it like that, you know. RFK Jr., you know, and I listened to a lot of the interview that Joe Rogan did with him, which subsequently disappeared from Facebook and YouTube in all but clips. Yeah, he was saying, you know, the main area that he and RFK Jr. have conflict is around fossil fuels. He's all for them. RFK Jr., not so much. The thing is, he's going to give them something to do which involves health. And
But here's the rub with that. He's prepared to work with someone who he isn't 100% ideologically aligned with, but they can actually sit down like grown-ups and discuss things and create solutions that are better for the constituents that they hope to serve. What a concept.
Yeah, what a concept. Elon Musk, given a role overseeing an improvement to government efficiency. I mean, it's going to be so entertaining. I don't get it with Biden. I don't get it with Harris. I don't understand how either of those people could be. They both give me the creeps. But not everyone feels that way.
No. Well, and someone that certainly doesn't feel this way, and we're going to kick off with this, because we will talk about that Rogan interview, because we did both watch it. But let's start with things a little closer to home. And I reminded myself today why I stopped reading Simon Wilson. I dived into the deep end. And now that I'm still recovering from a deep case of biliousness, Simon's... the only way to term it is he has a fully fledged, unabashed case of Trump derangement syndrome. His opinion piece in the Herald a couple of days ago was astounding. Mm. The headline was, "Why did John Key endorse Trump?" So I guess for Simon, this was a twofer. You're able to actually knock out two of your least favourite people at the same time in one column. So, you know, he was doing double duty. In the first paragraph where he says, now here he's spruiking for a tyrant. So, wow, Simon. as soon as I read that, I thought, wow, this is going to go downhill from there. And it did.
Yeah, I mean, you know what I said before about how any criticism or any backing of Trump is portrayed in a way that's cartoonish. He's all in with that, where he said, there are three groups who will benefit from a Trump victory. The first is the insurrectionists who stormed the Capitol on January 6th and are now in jail. Trump has pledged to pardon them. Second is the fossil fuel economy, including General Motors. Trump's climate denialism will give it a ridiculous late reprieve. The third group, here's where the red tape comes in, is the billionaires of Silicon Valley. It's an incredibly superficial and cartoonish view of your thing. So you could break those down. Insurrectionists, what happened there wasn't an insurrection. It's been called that. What happened with the Black Lives, when Black Lives Matter set cities on fire, was an insurrection. And a good number of those, they wouldn't release what proportion, a good number of the organizers were involved in either the FBI or CIA. And you can see the level of trying to get people, you know, often mentally unstable people pulled in to do things. So I don't buy that. And a lot of those people who are fairly innocent have been treated appallingly, particularly when given how off scot-free a lot of the people in the mostly peaceful riots got off. The fossil fuel economy, we've got to be realistic about the extent to which Western civilization depends on fossil fuels. We can transition out, but if you chop it off, people are going to starve. And the third group, the billionaires of Silicon Valley. Now, the billionaires of Silicon Valley were pulled in by the blob and forced to do their bidding. Mark Zuckerberg recently expressed regret about that.
Well, I mean, there's a reason why Jack Dorsey, all of a sudden, he just was gone. He checked out. He's like, I can't do this anymore. And yeah. He, you know, sort of went all very hippy-dippy and sort of headed off into the wilderness. And I think it's because he looked at what was going on and thought, I don't want to be a part of this. I can't be a part of this.
In a recent interview, the interview I quoted widely from Gallenberger was talking about the extent to which getting rid of X is a must-have, not a nice-to-have. It's the one exception. It's the one who hasn't fallen into line in the censorship message controlling. How just completely all-encompassing the drive to manage the messages. And I find it quite chilling the extent to which New Zealand's media is all in with that.
Absolutely. You mentioned before, you know, the pieces in the New Zealand media were Washington Post and New York Times. And talking about the criminality and everything that's going on with Donald Trump. Now, look, I mean, I could take or leave Donald Trump. But when I look at the campaigns, I look, like you, at the broader campaigns and the benefit that they bring. And you're right, I look at Trump. I don't just see Trump. I see Trump and Vance. Vance impresses me. You've got three very high-profile former Democrats now standing up there on the stage with him, with as an RFK Jr., Gabbard and Musk. Then you've got Vivek Ramaswamy. So if you're wanting somebody with some business smarts, Vivek Ramaswamy. And smarts generally, Vivek
Ramaswamy. And piano playing ability. I heard him play Tchaikovsky's Flight of the Bumblebee.
And he's young and he's dynamic and he's got energy. But then you've got people like Dana White and other business leaders that are coming out to these rallies for Trump. Meanwhile, Kamala Harris, you've got Harrison Waltz. Well, I mean, Waltz looks like that bumbling. I mean, God.
Creeps, man. That guy gives me the creeps. I look at him and I get just a chill. I don't like him. There's a type of man who's socialist. You know, they're kind of weak and they use what I call the cuttlefish mating technique, where weak little cuttlefish tuck their male cuttlefish bits up and pretend to be girly cuttlefish and sneak under the big dominant male cuttlefish with their harems and pretend they're ladies too and mate with them. And if you talk to any woman who's moved in those circles, they'll tell you about that. Oh, yes, I'm an ally. Have another glass of Chardonnay.
Yeah, well, and I think in Tim Walz's case, he'd be actually quite happy for those big boy cuttlefish to come along. But anyway.
Yeah, that's the vibe I get from Simon Wilson.
But you look at who else they've got up there. They are trotting out all these celebrities. And with between the Epstein and the Diddy scandals, it makes you wonder, why are they actually there? The one Republican that they're pulling out to sort of speak out against what's going on is Liz Cheney. She spends most of her time with a face like a cat smacked ass. I mean, it's just like, This is what they're putting out there. And then that you have the case with Harris, you know, pulling out big superstar power like Beyonce and letting their people believe that she's going to perform. Tens of thousands turn out. And the minute after 3 minutes of Beyonce, of her talking, hundreds, if not thousands, just turn around and walk out after waiting for hours and hours and hours to hear a song by Beyonce. Well, you know, it just shows you the inauthenticity of what's going on. And the whole thing is really quite amazing to watch.
I see this as a global power struggle, and it's a struggle of national identity versus this all-encompassing globalist tide that thinks there's too many people on earth and thinks that people can't be trusted to vote for the right thing, you know, has all sorts of weird little kinks with it. You know, I mean, I often quote Bob Moran as saying that for most people, confronting the idea that those in charge mean them harm is something that they just can't manage to internalize because it's too awful. I think another thing like that is the extent to which blackmail is used to keep people in line. I mean, every time I see Ashley Bloomfield with his burned out eyes, I think, did you go to a conference and have a funny sort of taste in drink and then get filmed doing something? And that's where, you know, the media always portrays the P. Diddy's, oh, they're perverts, or Epstein, oh, he was a pedophile. He was a procurer, and he was, you know, there's pretty good evidence that there's a trail that leads to Mossad there, and that's one of their kind of preferred tactics. They have a whole range of whole DVD collection that they can go, do you want to keep your salary and your prestige and all that? I mean, we're keeping it going in the media. We can destroy you. So your choice is keep your salary or go to jail as a pedophile.
I think there is certainly an element of that with some people in the United States, for sure. I mean, Ashley Bloomfield, who knows? I mean, I just look at somebody who, from all accounts, was a mediocre doctor that moved into administration, that got some power and then got bounced basically from one administrative job to another until he got a big job with a big paycheck. And all of a sudden, you were centre of the world. And it's very, very difficult to let go of all that love and adoration and power.
Yes, but as a quoted before, I'm just trying to remember who said it, that the problem isn't that you can buy a US senator for $10,000. The problem is that there's a process to eliminate those you can't buy.
That sounds very Mike Benz-y.
No, it wasn't Mike Benz. And I mean, it might have just been a meme. But
yeah, funny that, you and a meme. Who would have thought?
It's naive to think that that doesn't happen in New Zealand. It's naive to think that we get the leaders we do because we vote for them.
Yeah, mind you, also too, here in New Zealand, you've got people like our friend Simon Wilson. Let's get back to Simon because, you know, I burned over this.
And the cuttlefish.
Yes, our little friend, the cuttlefish. There it was just so amazing to read the frustration. He was angry at John Key because John Key sort of was asked by Samantha Hayes who he would prefer. He sort of thought, oh, yeah, no, Trump. Wilson was appalled by this. A few weeks before the interview, Reuters reported that Goldman Sachs analysis showed job growth under Kamala Harris would likely be 10 to 30,000 a month higher than under Trump. Goldman Sachs also said Harris's plans for new spending and expanded middle income tax credits would boost GDP, while under Trump's tariff and immigration policies, GDP would contract, thus threatening a recession. Now, I don't know about you, Marty, but over the last 5 years or so, anything that looks or smells like a statistician's forecasting or model, I'm like, really?
Well, when did a lefty like Simon Wilson become so enamored with what Goldman Sachs, which the journalist in Rolling Stone, Matt Tabibi, so memorably described as like a giant vampire squid wrapped around the face of humanity, jabbing its blood funnel into anything that smells like money. You know, when did Simon Wilson become an ally with that? How come that doesn't give him pause for reflection? You know, hands, are we the baddies?
I know. And then he went there. Former US military leaders like Mark Milley and John Kelly, which we will get to them because they came up in the Rogan interview, know him well, calling him a fascist. See, he had to go there. And that for me in the last week, sort of a week or so out from the election, this is what tells me that the Democratic ticket knows that they have real problems because they rolled out the Nazi card. They rolled it out on the flimsiest of premises, that the Madison Square Garden rally for Donald Trump, which was massive, massively watched, absolutely sellout, huge event, that this was a Nazi rally because there was a rally by fascists there once. So therefore, you can draw the link that if you have any sort of event at Madison Square Garden, therefore, ergo, you are now a Nazi.
Donald Trump went to that wearing a black MAGA hat to the Undertaker's theme music. There was a level of threat in that, which was saying to the people in charge, say those generals, and again, you know, in terms of sexual blackmail, like, you know, there's some pretty creepy stories coming out of what goes on with the US general class. So yeah, there is a very real threat to those people who have thought themselves untouchable because the big machine was behind them. Mm. How Simon Wilson gets entrained, I mean, you know, my take on baby boomer, more government, less freedom folks like Simon Wilson are that they're like crack addicts who are just constantly thinking of the Springbok tour as akin to their first hit of meth and always chasing that high in increasingly degrading and undignified ways. And I think we're here with Simon Wilson in a bus stop toilet getting an exit.
And the sort of whole vibe that I got reading the weekend papers was really, if you aren't supporting the Democrats in this country, you are therefore a basket of deplorables. Mm. And Emerson sort of topped it off yesterday with his cartoon of, you know, an imagery of President Trump walking towards the White House as the Pied Piper being, you know, followed by a whole bunch of rats.
Emerson is so terrible. You know, like, I remember hearing Norm Macdonald, who's my favourite comedian. He was talking about, he was asked about Alec Baldwin's take on Trump. He said, I don't think you can do a really funny impersonation unless you basically like the person. If you hate them, it kind of comes through. And so, I mean, you know, you've got to remember, Emerson, remember, it's not his first rodeo in dehumanizing people like that. And in a very way that's characteristic of the way the Nazis characterized Jewish people, if you really want to go there, to the Nazi thing. I mean, he had a cartoon of Winston Peters with anti-vaxxers as blowflies following him. I mean, I didn't think of myself as an anti-vaxxer because it wasn't a vaccine in, you know, all except name. But if the state gives you a name that starts with a "the," it's dangerous territory to be in.
It is. So
can we finish talking about Simon Wilson?
Yeah, I'm done. Because honestly, I don't need any more gastrointestinal upset. Let's move on to two other people, you know, which are only mildly better, but they've obviously managed to find people to pay them to go on, you know, lovely little junkets across to follow the election in real life for realsies. Andrea Vance and Shane Tupou, they're both over there on the campaign trail. Andrea, I mean, she's choosing the leafy suburbs of Philadelphia, and having spent time in the leafy suburbs of Philadelphia, as I have.
Now, I've put stories together like this from, you know, difficult to read handwriting that I've done in bars and woken up the next day, oh, geez, I've got to post a story, and, you know, you sort of cobble it together. So if you know, remarks that you wrote down that people said to you, it's pretty easy. You don't have to do any research, and she obviously didn't. She's funded over there by the U.S. Embassy here. And, you know, I don't know if people know the U.S. Ambassador Thomas Udall was an appointee by the Biden administration. So another Democrat prosecutor.
Well, they all tend to be partisan, you know, so it's whoever's, you know, they roll and change them out. It was interesting. She was having a look. I mean, one of the things I found is she went to different communities. And so Pennsylvania, and I said it months ago, and I still maintain this, it's looking like things will go down to the wire in Pennsylvania. At the moment, some of the polls that I've been looking at the Nate Silver sites, Real Clear Politics is the other one I've been looking at. And it really is going to come down to, I think, four, which are going to be Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and North Carolina. Those are going to be the four that it'll come down to.
And you know what really gives me the creeps in all this is all the laws and rules they're passing, which would make it easier to commit voter fraud. And again, you know, the slogan from the Trump campaign is, you know, the election's got to be too big to steal. In Georgia, they're forbidding recording of ballot boxes. And what happens there? Why would you do that? Virginia, they've prosecuted the, I think it was the governor there, for taking 4,000 non-citizens off voting rolls. You know, that happens as a result of a law that was passed in 2006, you know, prevent voter fraud. Why are they doing that? And why are we being prepped for the result of it?
Well, I know that in Pennsylvania, they were already coming out and finding fraudulent ballots being dropped off by third parties. And so, particularly in Pennsylvania, they're looking at it with an absolute fine-tooth comb. So Andrea Vance is in Pennsylvania, bless her. And she popped in to see a guy called Jim Neal. The spotlight on the state is good for business, he says. He sells an extensive range of Trump merchandise from a shop in Quakertown Farmers Market. Red MAGA hats are by far the most popular line, but T-shirts featuring Evan Vucci's photograph of Trump fist raised with blood on his face in the aftermath of the assassination attempt also sell well. Butler, where the shooting took place, is just 5 hours west. On the shelves are farting Trump keychains, F Biden bumper stickers, and selling 100 cardboard Trump Vance signs each week. The wholesaler recently sold out, a shortage not seen during the 2016 or 2020 elections. And she says here, across the burbs, those signs are displayed on sprawling lawns in Horsham and in neighbouring Montgomery County. They are complete with Harris Waltz banners and lavish Halloween displays. Now, talking to my friends and compatriots across in the United States, one of the things that I'm hearing from them is in some of those suburbs that are traditionally very, very Democrat, and you will have these big buntings out on these beautiful homes, like beautiful homes, and it's all, you know, in this house we support, you know, that kind of thing. And it's always exclusively Democratic. What is now popping up are more and more Trump Vance signs that you normally would never have seen, and you didn't see in 2016, you're not seeing in 2020. So not only are people getting out there, and if they were quietly supporting before, but they're actually now putting literally a stake in the ground and saying, this is where our support is.
It's amazing. I mean, you know, I'm listening to the way we're talking about Trump, and I know that Olivia Pearson's complained about this before with our show, is, you know, that we hedge it. And I'm conscious that there is that bit of mind control that's gone into it. If you support Trump, you're an idiot. I actually like him. I like listening to him. As I said, he's a uniquely Trumpian kind of personality. I mean, if we're putting our cards on the table and putting out our weird ideas to destroy our own credibility, I'll say I think he's a reincarnation of General Patton. He was born about 10 months after Patton died. They look similar. I think you know, he is one of those archetypal figures. People often dream about him. It's a strange thing seeing something that's historic up so close.
I look at, as I said, that wider ticket. So for me, the wider ticket from a Republican standpoint is stronger than
more.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, Tulsi Gabbard for me, and you too, right? Huge part of that.
Huge
love
part of
there.
That. Yeah.
And you know, Tulsi Gabbard did a great interview with Jordan Peterson, really worth listening to. There's some real goodness inside that, that campaign.
So, and just to remind people, why did Tulsi Gabbard fall foul of the Democrats? Well, I can tell you why Tulsi Gabbard fell foul of the Democrats, is that she is a veteran, but she's also very involved in sports. She's very outdoorsy. She is from Hawaii. She is very popular across there. She crossed the floor with a Republican and they drafted some legislation to help keep sports for biological women. That's where she fell foul of the machine, because she broke one of those, you know, sacred cow rules that you have in progressive politics, that biological sex is a real thing. And I think that for her was when she started waking up to what was going on, because ultimately as a politician, she's actually quite centrist. You know, she's like many of us of a certain age, where the Overton window has gone and it's high and dry.
Yeah. Typically Democrats are pretty far right of national.
Yeah.
Are they? You know, I mean, until recently.
Well, until Kamala,
you know,
yeah.
Kamala Harris, overwhelmingly the most left leader in America.
Yeah.
If you look at a voting record.
Yeah. And so Shane Topoz over there as well. Now, it doesn't say that Shane's been sponsored over by anybody, but he's over there with a good mate of his who is a Republican Trump-supporting mate called Punter.
Who's sure he's going to lose. That was weird, wasn't it?
Which I thought that was very, very weird. They started out in dive bars. Now, it's really, I mean, Shane, bless his little heart, is talking about how, you know, there could be Texas and Florida might flip. I don't know in what universe that's ever going to happen. For starters,
in the universe where there's 20 million people being let into the country and this is a tight election, and they mysteriously have been bussed into marginal states given cell phones, right? Again, the pressure to make the election too big to steal is a vital one.
But he was, you know, he's interesting. He is also seeing.
He wrote this one.
I think he did.
You know, yeah, I know you want to hear my Helen Clark voice. I didn't hear Helen in this one.
No, the headline was the only thing that was Helen-ish. No, he definitely wrote this one. And he's having a good look around. He sees the same too. North Carolina, Pennsylvania is probably where the party is going to be at, and that's where the whole thing is going to be won or lost.
But another story that was written hungover, like, oh, I've got enough notes. And, you know, with Andrea Vance's, you know, she's talking about, oh, these things, farting key rings, and blah, 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 blah. every second sentence, she would have looked at a word count. Almost there. Almost there.
You know, Shane did actually say the quiet part out loud. So I'm going to keep you informed as I possibly can. I'll be spending time on the ground, particularly in Pennsylvania, talking to the locals at sporting events and in local diners and dive bars, purely for research purposes, of course. I was like, well, actually, Shane, kudos for actually getting out and talking to the real people. So I did think that that was quite funny. Right, Rogan. I want to talk about Rogan.
Yeah, all right, let's go.
Let's go. So the first thing that's happened is that Kamala is definitely not going to do Rogan. She only wanted to do Rogan if Rogan came to her and she would only give him an hour. And Joe's like, well, it's not kind of how it works. You sort of have to come for me.
He was very diplomatic when Trump was saying, she's not going to do it. She's not going to do it. You know, he said, I will interview her. I'm sure she'll be great. And I want to talk to her as a person. So, you know, he didn't fold into that. I thought
there was a
level of neutrality and journalistic integrity that's absolutely absent.
I thought that it was a misstep by her. I really do. I think, you know, because she could have gone and all he wants is a conversation. What he did with Trump was just simply a conversation. There was sort of a humanity with that interview. So, I mean, I've written down some notes here just over the whole themes, right, of this election. And for that interview, I've written here identity versus humanity. Now, I've talked about that before. The whole Democratic campaign, the whole critical social justice, Marxism, communism, whatever you want to call it, is all based on identity, not humanity. And that interview showed you not the identity of Donald Trump that the left and the Democrats want to portray, but it actually showed the humanity of the man. And those are little, for me, the little unguarded moments, like when he actually started talking about UFC and fighting, which is obviously an interest and a passion for him, that sport. And he was getting quite unguarded and talking about that and talking quite freely, not thinking about his answers or checking them, or he was just genuinely engaging in one-on-one banter.
Yeah, and can do it.
Yeah. So that humanized him for me quite dramatically. And they talked about the nick in the ear, and Rogan did very well because Trump liked to, what did he call it, the weave? He liked to go off and tell a story and he would go off in different directions and try and weave it back. And Rogan did very well. He kept trying to bring him back to a sort of central theme and a point. What were your initial thoughts with it? I mean, how did you sort of pick it? Did you look at it? What grabbed you?
Again, my disclosure, you know, I like Donald Trump. I like Joe Rogan. I like Alex Jones. I like David Icke. These are people that we're conditioned to think, oh, man, you can't be serious if you like them. I don't like everything about them, but I'll listen to them. You know, they're cultural phenomena. I thought it was good, but I'm not in a state anymore where I think that my way of seeing the world is enough to carry an election, and it's about 10%. As I said, in the idea of a village, I'm the noticer. I'm the person who's saying, hey, we haven't had a lot of rain, our food supplies are low, the village across the hill is going to have the same thing. Maybe we should be a bit more careful guarding our grain stores. You don't even need everyone in the village to be doing that because it wastes energy. You just need a few. You want other people to be digging. And what the fat controllers who are putting all the stuff in our papers have carefully done is made the diggers think that the notices are dangerous to them and mad. And so, you know, where I'm always trying to think at the moment is, you know, what do we do to get the diggers back? How do we step? Because it's not a lack of good quality information. It's a much deeper psychological operation for that. And in order to be successful in it, and I'm speaking to most of our listeners here because by nature, I think we're at a ceiling in RCR where we've got a lot of the notices, people who notice things, listening, but sharing it with the diggers isn't going to be enough. We almost have to reassert our role as, you know, the people who tell them what to do.
Yeah.
Because we'll have that WAF and SS 30% who are very unabashed about telling people the Simon Wilsons, the cuttlefish.
But that's where the diggers come, though, is when you have, like in states, one of the polls I'm having a look at, Nate Silver last night, is one of the areas that's tightening up quite a bit is those western states, those western border states. So I'm talking Arizona and Nevada. So the 20 million that have come across the border, I mean, the butterfly effect of that, yes, they're bringing these voters, supposed, that are going to be able to waltz in without voter ID and cast a ballot, which I'm sure will probably happen in places. But also, too, you've got all those legal immigrants. A lot of Latinos are now coming in for the Republicans.
They jumped through the hoops and filled out the forms.
And African Americans, because their jobs they're seeing are being taken by these migrants. But also too, you've got a lot of these migrants who are black themselves, who are committing crimes, are doing dreadful things, and of course the local population who have been there for hundreds of years are saying, "Whoa, this isn't us. You know, don't blame this on us." You know, if you're just judging a book by its cover. So they're seeing perpetuation of racism starting all over again, and they don't want that. They don't want their jobs threatened. They want the safety and the integrity of their families met and kept. Those ones that I think the Democratic Party have always instantly relied on getting a fixed percentage of that vote's now been eroded, and you don't have to have too much erosion across certain states because it's a state-by-state win. It's not a total number of votes cast across the entire ballot, which is, again, why when TVNZ puts up a poll from the ABC saying Harris has got 51% support, Trump's only got 47%, and it's a five-point shift, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what the national shift is. It's state-by-state. It's that electoral college. Go back and listen to the compilation I did with Cam yesterday. It will come down to those four states, Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, plus or minus Nevada and Arizona. That's what it'll come down to. Mm. Those are the ones to watch.
I think Trump will win. It's just whether he's allowed to win, whether it can be too big to steal. And, you know, I'll keep saying this, the two most censored things by the blob, you know, it's the CIA, Department of Homeland Security. The issues that they most censored were any suggestion that COVID vaccines weren't safe and any suggestion that postal ballots unsafe. Mm. Those two things. Why?
Yeah. So Rogan, now last I saw, was sitting, the full interview, when you could find it on YouTube, was sitting at about 37 million views. They've now buried the full interview. So, I mean, if you've got a Spotify account, you can find it there. I think Elon has posted also on X. Yeah, so it's easy enough to find there. The other thing in it that I quite liked too is for the first time I saw Trump actually admit that he'd made some mistakes. Now, traditionally, he's not really been fond of that. And he did it in terms of there were some bad people. I chose some bad people. There were some bad people there. I won't do that this time. There's bad people. And he was referring, I think, to the Millies and the Kellys in terms of a military, because we've got plenty of good generals, not those bad generals, but got good generals. So that was a dig, I believe, very much at them.
Interesting thing is watching them squirm. You know, is watching those people who know that, you know, like, and Rogan brought this up as well. I thought it was a really good thing that you didn't put Hillary in jail, because that would have destabilized the country. I think the gloves are coming off with that kind of thing now.
The election interference, when he asked him about the election interference, his answer was not what I expected. His answer was, well, the laptop alone, the Hunter Biden laptop, which surfaced just a few weeks from the election last time by the New York Post, that literally was scrubbed from the internet. Yeah. He said that alone.
Yeah, see, the notices, that'd be a big deal. Like, well, wait a second, who did that? Who interfered in that election like that? You know, for the dumbfounded dipshits, it's not a problem. And the problem is the dumbfounded dipshits. Yeah. I mean, you know, you said you're getting back to New Zealand politics briefly. In Tuesday's Herald, you had that story, Labour closing the gap on top issues, that was widely quoted. But it's the 30% again. 30% of voters now think Labour is the best party at dealing with inflation. Well, what the hell do they know? They're the best party at creating inflation. So it's kind of like, well, you know, they're the arsonist that's the best at firefighting.
But, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it is an all-out war with the media.
Mm. Now, there are a couple of little glimmers in the last sort of few days. And one of the things with the Madison Square Garden rally is Tony Hinchcliffe, who is a comedian, who has a very popular podcast that my sons love, Kill Tony, I think it's called. My youngest son loves it. And he's a roast comedian. So basically, so he pokes fun at people. That's what he does. So he got up, he had a couple of off-color jokes, one of them about Puerto Ricans. So you can imagine the left media have gone and grabbed that and run with it for their all dear life. I mean, the joke fell flat, even in the crowd. So the joke fell flat. He kept going. Jon Stewart, late night comedian, he, bless his heart, swam against the tide on that.
Yeah, and a few of them, Bill Maher,
Jon Stewart. Yeah, so Jon Stewart, so he swam against the tide and was kind of like, well, he's a roast comedian. That's what he does. And he's funny. He's funny.
Yeah, to have a roast comedian turn up and not roast would be like Beyonce turning up and not, oh.
Exactly. Exactly. And then Harris, she had her little moment of silence at a recent rally where, you know, she gets everyone chanting, Kamala, 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 Hail Hitler, Hail. Anyway, and then she says, now everybody chant your own names, and just dead silence because, of course, the lemmings didn't quite know what to do because, oh, what is my name? Oh, orcs? Awkward much? It was.
I find her just terrible. And you know, I'm someone. You know, you can hear me talking about Tulsi Gabbard. I, like you, think she'd be the ideal presidential candidate. Love to see her. Mm. You know?
Oh, absolutely. And
I don't like women. I love women. It's I don't like Kamala Harris.
And I look at also too. The other thing you've got to look at is longevity, right? Tulsi Gabbard in her 40s. You've got Vivek Ramaswamy is in his 30s. JD Vance is, I think, in his late 30s, early 40s. You've actually got these young, energetic people. Like for me, I look at that and I think, and Ron DeSantis, he's in his 40s. You've got all of these incredible leaders coming up who are of an age to actually see, get experience and lead and be vibrant and have great ideas. The other thing I want to point out too.
Simeon Browns of America.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, pretty much. The other one too, Bezos. Did you see Bezos actually came out and put the brakes on the Washington Post, of which he owns, at openly endorsing a candidate, which is the first time that this has happened since the 1930s. I thought that was an interesting move. What are your thoughts on that?
Jeff Bezos, if you read what Amazon does, it's kind of like have a Second World War, get a Teflon fry pan.
Yeah. Do you think he's doing that to hedge his bets, though? Because he's thinking, actually, it's not looking good for the Democrats, so I better do something just in case I don't get my ass handed to me by the Republicans.
Yeah. It's a bit like the Zuck, you know, relenting from his complicit censorship of various things at the behest of the CIA or the Department of Homeland Security. There'll be a hollow feeling in a lot of stomachs.
Yeah.
And there should be. I mean, you know, Avia Millay, again, you know, you sort of watch what he's doing, and that's one way that history could go. And I mentioned to you, actually, when we were having that chat yesterday, I saw an interview with Eric Weinstein. I tried to find it again. I couldn't. Mm. I think he was talking with Tucker Carlson. It's the problem with just putting reels on in my pocket while I'm walking my dog. Hard to reference. But he said something which just turned a light on in my mind and linked to a lot of the things I've been talking about. And he said, you know, the reason people keep going back to communism, even though it's never worked, it can never work, it's a horrible set of ideas where you punish the winners and reward the losers, is that capitalism, for its benefits, hasn't found a way to give a consolation prize to the winners. And, you know, when I thought about that, I thought, well, that's what I've been thinking about for years and years. You know, we've got unemployment. Let's give people who are unemployed a righteous mission. Let's have something to show for it. You know, and same with shrinking the public sector. You know, let's say, hey, you guys are going to oversee the planting of New Zealand's rivers. We're going to have the best water quality coming out of our fresh water. Soon after that, there's just the fruit salad of listening that I do while I'm while I'm out walking, I was listening to Greenwashed, and they were talking about how New Zealand's liabilities in its Paris Accord agreements are now $30 billion. Now, I've always said they're going to $70 billion. Hmm. But what we should do now, a campaign maybe RCR should launch, is we should retrospectively get agriculture out of our commitments. The Paris Accord specifically said they shouldn't be there, and they shouldn't be there. Food production was exempt. We had James Shaw trotting around, you know, all of these weirdos, you know, wanting a big round of applause and wanting to, you know, be saving the world, boldly volunteering New Zealand to be sacrificed on the altar to the climate fairies. We need to backtrack that and say, hey, the Paris Accord exempted that. You know, he got a bit carried. He does that. He does that. You know, see those big, fat, parotid glands? He drinks a lot of piss. Turns out that, I don't know, he got caught in some honey trap, and some person he met the day before thought it was a good idea, and then they taped it and said, you better stick with the script. I don't know. That's just conjecture. But it's irrational, and it's just horrible to think that we had people going, like Dear Leader, you know, who wanted to do a speech and get rapturous applause in Paris so she cancelled our natural gas. In my mind, it's simple. You know, fossil fuels are bad. In my mind, it's simple. And I noticed, actually, this is just, I'm fruit salading in the same way.
You're riffing. Keep going.
I don't know if you saw, there was our friend Barry Young tweeted that there was an OIA that revealed that the Gates Foundation was involved with the Ardern government and COVID policy. And they had this list of communications that were from the Goalkeepers, which is the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation that Dear Leader spoke at, where she revealed, which was news to New Zealanders, that they were one of the first governments in the world to make all of their legislation compatible with Agenda 2030. But it just had this big list of the Goalkeepers event hosted by the Gates Foundation, which the Prime Minister attended as a keynote speaker regarding sustainable development goals, inequality, well-being budget, and climate goals. And then it had a letter which was talking about the Prime Minister's comments at Goalkeepers and the Generation Equity Forum. But it had phone meetings where the Gates Foundation was talking with the Prime Minister about COVID-19 vaccines and the impact of COVID-19 on women, and then the impact on COVID-19 on women and girls, and the elimination of violence toward women and girls. It was obviously that sort of picked, that's her hot button, we'll just fire it up. And in my mind, it's simple. In my mind, it's simple. The problem isn't that you can buy a senator for $10,000. The problem is that there's a process to eliminate people you can't buy.
Yeah. Yeah, I think James Shaw honestly just wanted to look cool in the Cool Kids Club. I really do.
That's the charitable way to think about it.
I know, but the thing is sometimes...
The P. Diddy way of looking at it.
I know, you say this, Marty, but sometimes if it walks like a duck, quacks like a duck, looks like a duck, it's a duck, dude.
A lot of these people with effeminate sort of ways of talking, who knows what they feel like doing when they've got a couple of drinks in them.
Quack, 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 quack. Anyway, we've got feedback. We got lots of feedback. People liked you. People liked Marty. Good morning, Marie. Maybe Marty can help me. As he lives in Tauranga, who has Tauranga City Council sold the Marine Precinct to? And where does this info come from? It has apparently not been reported by other media, and no one here knows about it except us RCR devotees. I'm looking stupid because no one believes me. Help. Love your show, your voice and your humour. Right.
The lovely Liz sent that, and I said, Erica Harvey, here's your girl.
Erica is definitely. So flick that one on to Erica.
Yep, she knows far more about it than I do, and she's doing a great job in there.
Yeah, she's got a finger on the pulse.
Paul Brennan, I think, interviewed her. So, yeah, we'll see if we can put a link to that interview in the show notes, and you'll be on your way.
Hi, Marie. Can Marty please have a special spot each week reading an article in Helen Clark's hilarious voice? Love you guys. You're awesome. Well, we tried this week on Shane DeBow, but then we realised Shane actually wrote his own column this week. So we couldn't do it.
Yeah. I have to give the Gisborne Herald photographers a call because, and I don't have a copy of it, but there is a photo of me with my arm around Helen Clark in the main street of Gisborne. And as I've often said, she's far more appealing in person You've got your story about yeah. Meeting at the airport, haven't you?
Well, I knew her.
She's a far more appealing person than she comes across. And, you know, like, this was 15 years ago as well.
Look, I won't lie. I was on a first-name basis with Helen, so I did know
her. I used to live across the road from her, and she used to have these street corner meetings. And we're having a street corner meeting, and here's your Helen Clark voice for the fix for the week. And someone rode by drinking a beer on a bike and just yahooing on his way to a rugby match, and she growled at him, "That's why we don't want lights at Eden Park."
Well, I remember those because that was outside of her electorate office on Sandringham Road. So I used to live just off, like, two blocks down from that office. So I live around the corner from you, even then. Man, I know, we do. We
used to follow each grandparents sort of having stores in the same Waipiro Bay community.
Oh, all right. I'm putting on my big girl pants. On Tuesday morning, I give a talk to my Rotary Club. I'm going to come out of the closet, e.g. not vaccinated, from Leslie in Rolleston. Oh, Leslie, I'm so proud of you. Well done. You would have done that now. Let us know how you got on. So 2057, yeah. Let us know how you got on, Leslie. I'd love to know that. I've done a couple of Rotary meetings. One of them went really well. And actually, I didn't talk about vaccination stuff. I talked about gender stuff. One of them went really, really well. And then the other one I think I talked about on here was definitely quite a different crowd. I had somebody in the crowd who certainly literally was like, "You sound very right wing. That's alt right." It's like, okay.
That's when you can use my most withering insult through COVID. And I hate to be picking on baby boomers, but baby boomer women disproportionately moaned at me for not wearing masks in the supermarket. And I used to point my finger at them accusingly and say, "When I was young, we had better old people."
Indeed. Hey, go Marie and Marty. Just went up to a few over 30s in the Curry Lounge in Christchurch and gave them a brochure saying, "Here's a new radio station you might be interested in." All said thank you. I saw one guy get his phone out, so hopefully, Rosa. Exactly. One-on-one's the way to go.
Hey, you've got to do that too, please. I've been sending people links to it. And the number of people, as I said, it seems to be a phenomena that is unique to us notices. The people who kind of go, "That doesn't look right," spread the word.
Yep. And finally, from Bronwyn, "Dear Marie, please tell Marty I'm impressed with his Auntie Helen voice."
Thank you very much, Bronwyn.
People love your Auntie Helen. "I'm very sorry and also angry to hear what's happened to you and your husband. If the sentence involves a fine, I hope you'll let us know and let the listeners help out." Look, that's really, really kind. And no, we've managed to do this all on our own so far.
Good on you, Marie. That's,
you know,
$23,000, $23,000, though.
Yeah. Oh,
people
my God.
Help out, you know?
I know. You know, all the fines turned up in an envelope in the post yesterday. I think that's part of the reason my mood was not so good yesterday.
Right.
And, you know, you get this huge, big A4 envelope turn up with this wodge, because obviously environmentalism in the Justice Department isn't a thing, because you get a separate piece of paper for every single charge and every single fine. There were 19 of them. I mean, you could have just itemized them and put them on a couple of bits of paper, but no.
There'll be a family heirloom one day. Don't chuck them out.
I know.
You can frame them.
I pull them out.
Maybe you should pay your fines by selling framed signed copies of them. You only need to sell 1,000.
This is the funny thing, you know, when you've been a rule follower. I mean, I've not always been a most agreeable person, but I've generally been a rule follower. So when you've been a rule follower for most of your life and you get something like that turn up and you look at it and you think, gosh, the things you get up to in your 50s, you know, how far you've fallen. Anyway, from Bronwyn. "I have some questions. I have a friend, or perhaps more accurately, an acquaintance, who is part of the Waka Mininga Māori government. She often pushes me personally and our local Freedom Hub at large to join the WMC and says it's the only solution. I don't know why, but I've always felt very resistant to do so. And as far as I can see, everyone else ignores you too. How is that practicing under Health Council? Did not offer your husband any protection. Did they offer him any help and support of the prosecution?" Right. So two things there, Bronwyn. Yeah, the very good questions. The Waka Mininga Māori Government and the Waka Mininga Health Council are two separate entities. Initially, there was an association together between the two, but that they decided to go down their own paths. The Wakamaninga Health Council, who we were registered with, were incredibly supportive and very helpful, but they're not a financial organisation, but they definitely did offer us a huge amount of support. If you listen to Phil's interview, we talked about that they had a parallel court case going on in the High Court while our case was also going on in the District Court. So if their court case, and in fact, their case was even more protracted than ours. If theirs was successful, our case would have been moot.
I mean, the assumption was that the Labour government of at the time did actually hold Māori values in equal esteem to the values of the globalist machine. And the truth is, it was just PR glitter that the turd was rolled in. They really didn't.
So this is the one weird upside, right, of our sentencing and of the conviction, is that in court now, a precedent is set. Because, I mean, we didn't take this Tikanga stuff lightly. I mean, we researched it extensively.
As a Māori.
As a Māori.
As a wahine Māori, Marie.
And the one criticism from the prosecution was the fact that we didn't rock up with kaumātua and stuff to defend that position. Well, if you know anything about tikanga, my little friend, you don't need to. And so you've either got one law in the land or you don't. Now, that's not to say that I don't believe in the essence of tikanga. Tikanga is something that is about humanity. It's very much about leading a good life and natural justice and the natural law of the land. You know, it's bigger than just those sorts of elements. And you either have to have a law of the land and follow that or not. And that's where the difference, I think, with Te Ao Māori and Tikanga can, in a legal perspective, can get a little bit hazy, because it's one of those you'll know it when you see it type moments from Dear Leader. You've got to have boundaries around it, and they weren't doing it. So we tested that in court too. There's a few other bits and pieces that you've popped in here, but maybe there are things that you could discuss with Alistair if you haven't already recorded with him. But if you have, I hope you're able to discuss on the next Media Matters. Thank you, Bronwyn. In regards to you joining the Māori government, that's something that only you can decide whether it's right for you. Do your research, and if you feel that that's something that you can get behind, by all means. You've got to do your research.
The Whakamaninga Health Council, a lot of the people who were really most enthusiastically pushing it had foreign accents and maybe didn't understand that when one group of Māori embrace something, they're not a homogenous mass of opinion. And you know, as someone who'd worked at the paper and periodically seen these various people using various natural laws to declare themselves a sovereign government, I knew that there was a certain level of derision among Māori who, for all that they protest, are pretty wedded to the Western governmental trough.
Yeah, and when it comes to tikanga as well, I find that your politics tend to need to align as well for them to take it seriously. And if your politics don't align, then they tend not to.
Historically, when Europeans first encountered runanga, which were a way of determining what tikanga was from kawa, which was the overarching philosophy and religious beliefs, they were astonished at how much minutiae was involved and how prescriptive it was. And the remark I remember reading was, it was saved from being tyranny by the fact that there was no compulsion to follow it. It is, in a way, the opposite to the law. It's very descriptive of how best to live, but you can still make your own decisions. And in those sort of senses, it offers a great possibility for New Zealand to live in a more Māori way, awesome, the balance too.
Māori moral compass, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, there's some real possibility there. It's just a shame it's all been turned into, a partisan kind of thing.
Yeah, which is sad. Hey, look, do send us your feedback. 2057 is the text. inbox@realitycheck.radio is the email. Look, time's gotten away on us, my friend. We need to get going.
Yeah, well, better take my trailer in for a warrant.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. All right, take care. And, of course, we'll do this all again next week, and hopefully we'll have some results for you with the election, but we'll just have to wait and see. But until then, have a great rest of week. I'm on the political agenda tomorrow morning. You can catch me then. You'll be following up with the Fourth Estate.
Yeah, I've got a good lineup this week, Fourth Estate.
Yeah, and lots of news too. Yeah.
Kids, and I think Rachel Stewart, but you'll find out on Friday morning.
Yeah, and I know there's been a lot of news, so you'll have plenty to cover.
Mm.
Right, we'll do it all then. And remember, as we said before, share, share, share. If there's anything that you like that you want to be able to share, whether it's a short shareable, something longer, a full show, pop it all out there.
Thanks so much, Marie. Thank you, Foundation members. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
And both of us will talk to you in one form or another tomorrow. Until then, take care.
The RCR Shop has great gift ideas. From great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers, and more. The RCR Shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.